From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. President Barack Obama made his historic first address to a joint session of Congress last night.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
After long applause and a standing ovation, the president spoke frankly and directly to the American people about the current financial crisis.
But while our economy may be weakened and our confidence shaken, though we are living through difficult and uncertain times, tonight I want every American to know this. We will rebuild, we will recover, and the United States of America will emerge stronger than before.
So will Mr. Obama's speech have the same impact as the first of President Franklin Roosevelt's fireside chats back in 1933? Joining me to discuss this and the week's political news is Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, and Robert Trainum, the D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast network CNN, host of Roll Call TV, and a professor at George Washington University. Robert, Mary, nice to see you.
Nice to be with you.
So last night's address was President Obama's opportunity, let's say, to lay out his agenda for the next 4 years and to reassure Americans that his economic recovery plan will lead the country in the right direction. Robert, how did he do?
You know, overall, I think he did pretty good. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being not so good, 10 being phenomenal, I would say I would give it a 7. And the only reason why I would give it a 7, not an 8 or 9, is because he was a little short on the specifics. There were, quote-unquote, typos in his speech. He misspoke twice, according to my account. One, he had said that the American ingenuity spirit had created the automobile. That's not accurate. And he also said that the GI Bill was founded during the Depression, and that's not accurate as well. It was founded after World War II. But nevertheless, it was a very good speech in terms of being optimistic, in terms of being forward-thinking, and also addressing the critical crisis that we currently face ourselves in from a financial perspective.
So, Mary, if those were the only mistakes, if we could call them that, those aren't big ones, are they?
No. They were not big mistakes. I think in overall terms, it wasn't truly inspirational speech. He's been in campaign mode for the last few weeks, and he does an excellent job when he does that. And the Democrats were in a celebratory mood. The mood was so different from what it was when Bush came to speak to the Congress. And as far as Franklin Roosevelt, Roosevelt's speech inspired people, his fireside chats, and he also, the first programs that were enacted by the Congress, did relieve suffering and create jobs, although the historical record is that they didn't really get us out of the Depression, but they were helpful to millions of people who were in very bad shape at that time.
Now, the president laid out quite an ambitious agenda last night. He pledged to deliver health care reform. He pledged to retool the regulatory system and to overhaul the auto industry. But he talked also about the problems of the perception that Americans have about our banking system. And he directly addressed the public's outrage over the industry's excesses and corruption.
So I know how unpopular it is to be seen as helping banks right now, especially when everyone is suffering in part from their bad decisions. I promise you, I get it. But I also know that in a time of crisis, we cannot afford to govern out of anger or yield to the politics of the moment. My job, our job, is to solve the problem.
But that's the big issue, isn't it, Robert, whether or not the people are, do they get it?
Well, you know, one of the things that the president tried to do last night, and I talked to some of his aides yesterday and on Sunday, and that was they tried to, or they wanted to portray a president that was speaking in plain English so that the American people out there can get it and connect the dots. And he did do that last night. The real question is whether or not the American people understood what he was saying, but most importantly, agreed with what he's saying. And according to the polling data, 80%, this is a Gallup poll that I'm citing here, 80% of the American people liked what he said, but about 55 to 60% are still a little skeptical, not 100% sold on his ideas so far. So only time will tell as to whether or not the American people out there, you know, in the Midwest and the South and so forth, really understand what the president's trying to do.
Well, one of his major problems, Tony, is that the people who he appointed who are around him, like Tom Geithner at Treasury and Larry Summers and various other people in the administration, were a part of the problem that was created and are closely tied to the banks. And there are some suspicion which is fired up by the talk shows and the hosts and the Limbaughs and the people on other places, that people don't really know if these people know how to fix something that they were part of messing up. And that's sort of undermining the message that the president delivers, because some people say, well, if he gets it, why does he have these people? Well, his answer is that these are people who have experience, who know how to fix it. We'll just have to see.
Well, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, to follow the point that both of you are making, who, by the way, is a rising star in the Republican Party, although the speech last night may or may not have helped that star continue to rise, delivered the Republican response to the president's address. He has been, of course, a vocal critic of the president's stimulus package, and he used his response to critique what he considers wasteful spending.
Democratic leaders say their legislation will grow the economy. What it will do is grow the government, increase our taxes down the line, and saddle future generations with debt. Who amongst us would ask our children for a loan so we could spend money we do not have on things we do not need? That is precisely what the Democrats in Congress just did. It's irresponsible, and it's no way to strengthen our economy, create jobs, or build a prosperous future for our children.
It raises the question, Robert, who the public believes, who does the public have faith in? Last night, the president attempted to sway the public to his point of view. Jindal's response, how effective do you think that was?
Well, you know, rhetorically, I thought Governor Jindal's speech last night was flat. And I can't tell whether or not perhaps we all put him on this shelf that was just way too high and he didn't meet those expectations, or if, in fact, we put him on the shelf and he just, you know, hit below expectations. But the bottom line is I would give that speech a 4 or 5. It just was not very clear and not very succinct. However, he did speak in very common English and very common language that I think the American people can understand. To answer your first part of your question, Tony, as to whether or not, you know, who's in control here from a power standpoint in terms of the people's trust, I think that pendulum switches back and forth. There are some people out there that believe that this president is on the right track. He's doing the right thing. He is inserting himself in this crisis and doing the right thing. But there's others out there that are cheering House Republicans specifically who have not supported this president's economic plan. And the governors out there, Republican governors, who have said they're not taking the money. So I would say right now, just from a rhetorical standpoint, it's a 50-50 draw.
You know, Mary, I heard Ed Rollins, a former Reagan White House aide, say very sarcastically last night about Jindal that was a speech that would make Sarah Palin happy looking towards 2012. What was your reaction?
Well, Jindal, who is a nice guy, and I spend time in Louisiana, and most people down there who vote for him love him. He's smart. He's delivered on most of his promises and the like. It was the speech was bad. It was flat. But I think that if Rollins meant that Palin fires up the troops and gets them moving and gets them interested, and Jindal doesn't seem to have any fire, then I think he's right about that. But what I wanted to say was that President Obama has high approval ratings, as reflected in the Gallup poll, although there are, 50-something percent who don't really know whether his ideas will work and are worried about it. All new presidents have high approval ratings, and when they have won by a landslide, they have really, really high approval ratings. But those dissipate rather quickly, depending on what happens. So now I think the American people are willing to put some confidence in what Obama says as compared to what the Republicans have to say, led by Jindal and others, for now. But if there isn't some payoff fairly soon as time goes by, I think his poll numbers will start to erode. So let's hope that doesn't happen, because we all hope that the economy will get better.
Tony, can I respond to that very quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Look, the president said on numerous occasions last night, and rightfully so, that this is a problem that we inherited. I mean, and I think that was one of the strongest applause lines that he got last night, is when he repeatedly said, look, this is, well, he didn't say this, but he implied that this is not my fault. However, we have to deal with this issue. And I think the American people understand that. They understand that this is not Obama's fault, but obviously he is now in control. And so it now becomes his fault to a certain degree, because he is now has to get us out of this problem. My point is, and I think Mary just said this, the American people are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, and he has a honeymoon now. The question becomes is how long does that honeymoon last?
But there's one other point that to make, and to be fair and to be objective, it was a bipartisan failure that got us into this. Many of the things that were passed that deregulated the banks were passed with the support of Democrats in Congress, like Senator Schumer of New York, and
Barney
Senator
Frank.
Dodd, and others. And President Clinton knows this, that it was a bipartisan agreement to do a lot of deregulation and, you know, so that free enterprise could do its work and all the rest. So the mess that we got in, Bush led the way, making the mess more than anybody else made mess. But in fact, some of those people who were sitting in the Congress watching as the president was speaking know that they, too, were part of the problem.
Well, I agree with that.
Certainly it was an interesting appearance last night on many levels as we bring this conversation to a close. One of them, of course, being that apparently President Obama is the first African-American to ever address a joint session of Congress. So that was history in the making. And I suppose every day that he remains as president is another history-making day.
Now, Tony, he was the first African-American president. He wasn't the first African-American. As I recall, I think Nelson Mandela spoke to a, well, I don't want to quibble about this.
Yeah,
but
well,
he's the first African-American president to speak to a joint session of Congress.
All right, we'll look into the history books to make sure. But I know that Sirleaf Johnson spoke and Mandela, but African-American was the one that separated Obama last night. I appreciate all of you coming on. Thank you very much. We'll get together again next Wednesday.
Thanks, Tony.
Mary Frances Berry and Robert Trainum in the D.C. Bureau.